This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The debate over gay rights hit close to home recently when the Charlotte City Council considered an ordinance that would have amended sections of the city code to include non-discrimination language regarding familial status, marriage status, sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. In the absence of the ordinances, businesses can refuse to serve or rent to people in those categories. Among America's 20 largest cities, only Charlotte, Memphis, and Jacksonville are without such protections on the books. City Council's debate over the ordinance was its most contentious meeting in years, with more than 100 citizens speaking before council and during a rally that preceded the meeting. Many of the arguments were based on religious beliefs, as espoused by Reverend Gabriel Rogers of Kingdom Christian Church.
I do not stand advocating beating a homosexual up. Tonight, I stand advocating standing on the truth of God's word, which simply reminds us that a man is a man and a woman is a woman.
But not everyone agreed.
I'm a Christian, and to hear that minister use Christianity is amazing to me. This is not what the God of my understanding would do.
I think the Christian right has gone a little crazy. It's about time that we tell American Christians, stop hating. It's gone too far.
Members of the LGBT community saw the proposed ordinance as something granting basic civil rights, but others, like Reverend Leon Threet of CFA Ministries, framed it as a moral issue.
I don't see anyone from LGBT being asked to travel in the back of a bus. But it happened in 1960, so don't try to jump on the wagon with an illegitimate cause. This is a moral matter, not a civil rights matter.
Still, others would say civil rights and morality are too tightly entangled to be separated. In the end, council voted the measure down 6-5 after it became entangled in an argument over a transgendered person's right to use the bathroom of the gender of their identity rather than that of their birth. Even after that part of the proposal was removed, some supporters on council voted against it because they felt they couldn't vote in favor of a half measure. That put the matter to rest for council, but the conversation continues, and we pick it up this hour. We're joined by people on both sides of the issue. Scott Bishop is board chair of the Mecklenburg LGBT Political Action Committee, whose mission is to mobilize the LGBT community and its allies to vote and participate in local politics. He also serves on the National Board of Directors for the Human Rights Campaign. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Dr. Mark Harris is senior pastor of the First Baptist Church of Charlotte, a position he's held since 2005. He has served in a number of leadership positions, including former president of the North Carolina Baptist State Convention and the Southern Baptist Convention. He also ran for U.S. Senate, if you recall, in 2014. Welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And coming in as a neutral voice is Dr. John Schmier, associate professor and associate chair of the Department of Political Science and Public Administration at UNC Charlotte. In his work, he focuses on two central questions: the role that information plays in judicial decision-making and the effects of diversity on the judicial process. Thank you for being here as well. Did I get that right?
Yes, and okay. Great to be here, Mike.
Nice to have you. Let me begin with you, Scott. Some characterize this proposed ordinance as a regulation waiting for a problem. So how big is a problem is this issue in Charlotte, Mecklenburg?
So all we can base this on is the stories that we've heard from our friends about being discriminated against. Right now, the city of Charlotte doesn't track this kind of information, so we have no idea how big it really is. But we do know that, you know, we've heard stories of LGBT organizations, say, planning an event, and they hire a caterer. And then at the last minute, the caterer finds out that it's an LGBT group and backs out of it, leaving that group with, you know, having to scramble at the last minute to find someone to cater the event that they've planned for weeks or months.
Is that a business's right, though, to do that? Whether it's they don't want to serve an LGBT person, or would they be allowed to do it if it were a black organization?
No, they wouldn't. If they were a black organization, that black organization could say, we've been discriminated against. They would go to the Community Relations Committee and file a complaint, and then there would be mediation between the two organizations.
Now, African Americans are a recognized minority. Are LGBT people recognized as a minority? Dr. Schmier.
That depends. So, for example, the Civil Rights Act
prohibits discrimination based on race in public accommodations. Mm-hmm. So Six Flags, for example, your local restaurants, caterers can't discriminate based on race. But that prohibition doesn't apply to discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The federal laws that apply to discrimination in the workplace don't apply to sexual orientation and gender identity.
So are there any laws on the books, either federally or in North Carolina or in Charlotte-Mecklenburg or anywhere else in the state of North Carolina at the municipal level that protect LGBT people in any way?
Yes, at two levels. So there are some county and city, primarily township ordinances, that prohibit discrimination of the employees, and that includes Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. So employees of the county and the city can't be discriminated against based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So for example, a transgendered police officer could use a government restroom, but a transgendered citizen cannot or can be prohibited from using the restroom.
In a public building. In a county-owned, city-owned.
And so this is an important distinction. There's the government buildings versus public accommodations.
Right.
Public accommodations are privately owned but open to the public.
Even if this ordinance had passed, if a baker refused to make a cake for a gay wedding and didn't say, I'm refusing it because you're a gay person, how would you prove that it was discrimination versus they're simply being unable to make that cake because maybe they over-projected their business and just don't have time to make that cake?
I'm not a legal expert, so I don't know how that is proven. But if someone were to go into, you know, a business and they felt if they were standing next to someone else who ordered the same cake at the same time and that person was given a cake and the person who didn't get the cake wasn't, I mean, you know, that's maybe the start of it, you know, and they ask questions, why wasn't I given the cake?
Because that's an example that's been used in the press. The other examples that cab drivers could refuse to give a ride to somebody, a landlord could refuse to rent to someone who identifies as LGBT if they identified themselves in that way to that person. But if that person doesn't then respond, it's very difficult to prove discrimination in leasing anyway, and we know what happens with African Americans.
Sure, and we know that, or you know, there are a lot of anecdotes that suggest that cab drivers don't stop for African Americans. It's difficult to prove, but on the other hand, it's not impossible. There's a discovery process whenever there's litigation, right? And so you can collect information, and then proceed there.
Dr. Harris, What's the prime? Because you were one of the leaders of the movement again in favor of Amendment 1 passing, which was the marriage amendment, the gay marriage amendment, which did pass, and we outlawed for about a nanosecond gay marriage in North Carolina in the Constitution. What was you and other people who are against this ordinance? What were your primary reasons for being against it?
Well, the primary concern that we tried to lift out, and a lot of things got sort of caught up in the conversation and never got made clear, is that this just, from our perspective, was bad public policy. For the government to step in and create a special protected class for people based on their sexual expression or their sexual orientation is just concerning that we would, create a protected class. I think the argument has been made by those in the African American community very clearly. Two of them you played, I think, in your opening segment, that while civil rights has been an issue that it seems like the LGBT movement has tried to jump on and be a part of, the reality is that when they talk about their civil rights, it's far different than the constitutional rights of African Americans.
How so?
Well, then African Americans who were forbidden from their ability to vote, mm-hmm. their ability to have a voice back in the day prior to civil rights. And so, you know, there's a whole body, and I realize, Mike, there's a bunch of disagreement and bodies that have been produced on both sides of whether someone's sexual orientation is something they're born with or whether it's something that they choose. And the reality is that I don't think that issue has been settled.
But you were part of a movement that was set out to deny gay people's right to marry. Isn't that the same as denying somebody the right to sit in a restaurant because of the color of their skin or denying them the right to use a water fountain because of the color of their skin. Isn't that the same thing?
No, I don't believe it's the same thing at all, because what we did in an amendment, the marriage amendment that passed in North Carolina, 61% to 39%, was basically state by popular vote of the people of North Carolina that marriage in North Carolina would be recognized as between a man and a woman. It had stood the test of time for throughout our history. It was something that obviously the majority of our citizens believed and agreed with, and it was actually was part of our Constitution until a federal judge took the opportunity to strike it down back last fall.
We're talking about what happened at City Council and the ordinance that did not pass to give LGBT people protections here this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Dr. Schmier.
To be fair, while yes, discrimination based on race and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity aren't perfectly analogous, there are several analogs. Morality, for example, was used as a justification to support discrimination based on race. Morality, for example, was used as a justification for anti-miscegenation laws, laws in North Carolina and other states that prohibited interracial marriage. I think that is fairly analogous to the laws that prohibit same-sex marriage, and those had strong support from the people in North Carolina.
Scott Bishop, to some, it is difficult to understand how people in the African-American community cannot see this as a civil rights issue, and many do not see this as a civil rights issue. Does the LGBT community see this as a civil rights issue, and if so, why?
Yeah, I mean, it's civil. It's part of, you know, part of your government, part of the society we live in. That's what civil rights are. I mean, it's, you look at it as the capital C civil rights of the 60s or small c civil rights, and that's the way we look at it. These are the rights that we should be afforded based on who we are in this country.
And Dr. Harris mentioned something that many people have talked about, and that is, why should we set up a protected class, create a protected class that we then codify? Isn't that dangerous? Isn't that setting a precedent that suddenly we're going to be doing this for lots of different classes of people? How do you see it?
We should be setting up a protected class, because this class is not protected right now, and it is discriminated against in many instances. And we talked about employment. You know, you can be fired in this state just because of who you are. No other reason. If someone looks at you and says you're gay, you're fired.
But in terms of constitutional law or legalities here and politics, is this not opening up a slippery slope? If we do it for LGBT people, are we going to be asked to do it in 3 years to another group of people?
Okay, so there's a lot of questions there. So in the early 1990s, Colorado, for example, passed a statewide law which said that localities could not give special rights to people based on sexual orientation. Supreme Court actually struck that down as unconstitutional. And part of the logic was, it's not really special rights the way it's written, and the way this ordinance, I believe, was written. It just said you can't discriminate based on sexual orientation. So I can't be discriminated against for being a heterosexual male, for example.
But are these special rights, or are these simply extending the rights that ordinary, that's an unfair word, that people who are heterosexual have already, period? They just have them.
Well, no, because the state, for example, is silent on the question of whether a homosexual employer could discriminate against somebody who is heterosexual. The protection goes both ways. Just for example, we have heightened protection based on race. That applies to me as a Caucasian equally under the law as somebody of color.
Okay. We're going to take a if you can do it in 15 seconds.
Well, all I was going to say is, I think you raised an interesting point early on, and I think the councilman, Greg Phipps, raised this question even back in December, and that was, what are there really issues of that going on in Charlotte? And there are no records. And I'd like to talk about that if we get a chance.
Okay, we'll come back with more in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about LGBT rights, and particularly about the ordinance that went down to defeat at City Council a couple of weeks ago with regard to extending protections to LGBT folks. Scott Bishop is with us. He's the board chair of the Mecklenburg LGBT PAC. Dr. John Schmier is associate professor and associate chair in the Department of Political Science in UNC Charlotte, kind of giving us a neutral opinion and a legal opinion on some of these things. And Dr. Mark Terrace, a senior pastor of First Baptist Church of Charlotte. You wanted to follow up on a question that I asked Scott Bishop at the very beginning of the program, Dr. Harris, and that was the fact that I asked him if how big a problem this actually is for people, and you say...
Right, and that was a question that I think Councilman Greg Phipps asked earlier when they had a special meeting leading up to the actual vote. And the answer that Scott shared today, it was exactly the answer, and that is there's really not a record of it because the ordinance hasn't been passed, there haven't been tracking records of these reports. And while I understand that, the danger that we see in this ordinance is it's kind of like they're telling us we need to pass this in order to see if there's really a problem before anything could be tracked. And what I've tried to share with folks from the beginning and from my perspective and many other folks that were on our side, nobody wants discrimination of individuals in Charlotte or anywhere else. We care about individuals. I don't want someone not to be served at a restaurant, but I also want the private business individual to be able to know that their religious convictions that are protected under the First Amendment allows them to cross a line.
But in the 1960s, that same argument, correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, but that same argument was used to say if you have a religious conviction, because many religious people believed that there should not be mixing of the races, would allow a restaurant owner to deny service to a black person. Isn't that the same thing? Isn't that bigotry? Isn't that wrong?
There's a difference in denying someone service at a restaurant, and I agree with you. That's wrong. And I even told Matt Comer the other night, I said, Matt, I promise you, if you know of a restaurant in Charlotte that a gay, a lesbian, LGBT individual has not been served, please call me and tell me that. I will call the manager myself, find out, and if indeed it happened, I'll be the first to join you in a press conference exposing that and calling that individual out. At the same time, though, I do believe when individuals are asked, as we've seen this ordinance used in other places in the country, to cross a line, say to participate in a same-sex ceremony, mm-hmm. that they have a religious conviction on that, that's concerning. This ordinance has been used like that. You mentioned the baker. I'll mention the florist in the state of Washington who had a tremendous relationship with a gay man, and he had bought flowers from her florist for 9 years, a great relationship, but she had a religious conviction, and she gave a testimony just about 3 weeks ago, I guess, on her first national interview. When she was asked about it, she said it was the most difficult day of her life when she had to tell him that she could not do the wedding. But they came together, and yet she has been the victim of a lawsuit as a result of that.
When this issue and other issues like it are discussed, we see a lot of fireworks, and we don't really hear what Dr. Harris just said. And I'm kind of surprised, actually, that he said he would go and defend somebody's right to eat in a restaurant.
Absolutely.
But he doesn't want it codified. And that's something that we don't hear a lot. What's your reaction to that, Scott Bishop?
Well, there are examples of it. So Dixie's Tavern, it used to be right down the street here. It doesn't exist anymore. Several years ago, a lesbian couple was in there, and they were refused service just because of who they were. They were sitting together in a booth, and the wait person did not want to wait on them. So they left that restaurant angry at that situation, and they had no recourse. They had no recourse other than to tell other members of the community. But they had no way to file a complaint. You know, if they were African American and they were sitting in that booth and they were refused service, they would have some way to work through that situation. But they had nothing they could do then. So there are real examples of that happening. You know, there was a restaurant owner who came that night. I've been reviewing the testimony of the night of the meeting. A restaurant owner came in and actually said, "I want the right to be able to refuse service to the people that I want to refuse service to." Mm-hmm. And that includes gay people. And he said, you know, I hire gay people, but I, as a business owner, I want to be able to do that. It was just so telling. I mean, he sat there and said that's exactly what he wants to be able to do.
So given that reality, and we know that there will be instances in the absence of an ordinance preventing it of people simply not serving people because of who they are, whether they're gay or whether they're black or whether they're pink, it doesn't matter. As a religious person, as a person who has said on this program, Dr. Harris, that discrimination is wrong, wouldn't it be better to codify it and eliminate it rather than leave it up to chance?
I don't believe so, because I believe, and again, particularly if you look at the writing of this ordinance, there were no protections in there for an individual for an exception based on conscience or our religious freedom. One of the great concerns that I do have is what we're seeing happen to our Constitution in recent days, and that is where the First Amendment gives us freedom of religion, you're hearing more and more the phraseology, we have freedom of worship. And I had a council member tell me directly that I have freedom to worship in my church house and I have freedom to worship in my house. But when I walk out into the community, as a business leader, that I no longer have that particular freedom. Now, I'm just going to tell you, that's concerning to me as a believer in this generation.
Go ahead, Dr.
So that's an interesting point, and it's, I think there's some irony there that it was actually Justice Scalia who wrote an opinion that actually gutted your right of the free exercise of religion. It was a case that actually dealt with peyote smoking by Native Americans as part of a religious ritual. And so your rights actually have been restricted for the last 25 years when it comes to free exercise. Now, there's a question of, you know, what does the Constitution mean sort of objectively? What does it mean to our subjective view? But in the end, it's what the Supreme Court defines it as. And so your right of free exercise is fairly limited, and it has been for 25 years with respect to states. There's a federal statute that has expanded it back to where it used to be for federal law. But at the state level, you don't have the protections.
Well, but what do you say to the Hobby Lobby case, where they found that those folks, the Green family, had the opportunity to exercise their freedom of religion and not offer those particular...
And that was federal law, right? So there's a federal statute, the Religious Freedom Protection Act, I believe, or Restoration Act, RFRA. That's expands back to where we were prior to 1990, your rights vis-a-vis the federal government. But this is a state and local issue. And the Supreme Court said after that act was passed, it doesn't generally apply to state and local issues. So you have your rights with respect to the state are limited compared to your rights with respect to the federal government.
The Constitution guarantees...
My rights, too.
The Constitution guarantees freedom of religion.
Freedom of exercise of religion, okay, and freedom against the establishment of religion by the government.
Does it also give you freedom from religion?
So that's an interesting point, right? It can collide, particularly those two clauses that I mentioned. If somebody wants to, you know, for example, this happened at a university where I used to work at. The university said that religious organizations couldn't use the public facilities to meet. Mm-hmm. And then the university said, well, wait, if I let you use public dollars, then then that's not fair to other groups that don't share your beliefs. And what the Supreme Court said is they actually have that right to use those public facilities, and the university can't prohibit them from doing so.
Because even during the gay marriage debates here in North Carolina, I don't believe anybody truly believed that we were going to force the Southern Baptists, for instance, to perform a gay marriage ceremony. If we legalized gay marriage in North Carolina, we were going to let religious organizations decide whether or not they would participate in that. So I don't think that was ever a question, but the religious right and religions, many were not just on the right, were against this amendment and are probably against this ordinance based on religious belief. Am I right?
You are, because I think it does set up a slippery slope, as we talked about earlier.
But if we have freedom of religion and therefore freedom from religion, should religious beliefs, should the rights of believers infringe on the rights of other people?
I don't
in
think
the public sector.
Right. I don't believe they are infringing, particularly in this case, because
you're saying gay people can't marry. If you're saying gay people can't be protected because of moral beliefs or religious beliefs, aren't your religious beliefs trumping the rights of others?
No, because we're saying that marriage would be recognized in this state as being between a man and a woman. And again, that's what the people of the state voted. I also believe that at the end of the day, if we stop and think about this, the free market takes care of these types of things. If I were an individual, I wouldn't want to go into a business that didn't want me there. I think the individual that says I don't want to serve LGBT individuals in my restaurant, I believe they should be exposed, and I believe that in Charlotte, North Carolina, I don't think they would last very long. Now, I may be wrong about that, but again, that's the free market operating, not codifying into law and creating special protected classes for not just LGBT, but for on and on and on.
So why don't we remove race from the public accommodations ordinance then? Because, you know, if the free market's going to play out, then free market will play out, and we don't have to have protections based on race.
Because then you're coming back to the issue that I mentioned earlier, that I think there's bodies of evidence on both sides that always gets discussed, and we know that sexual behavior is in many people's beliefs a choice, a decision that people make. The color of one's skin or race, it's not immutable, it's not inborn, it's not involuntary, and that certainly has stood on its own historically.
So it's okay to not to discriminate against someone because of their sexual orientation, chosen or not, but it's not okay because of the color of someone's skin. I don't get that. A person is a person, and if we're being discriminated against, there should be some kind of law that allows those protections if based on your color of your skin, your religion, who you are.
Is this a moral issue, a religious issue? Is it both? Is the morality of it tied up in religion for you?
No, I think for me, I mean, I could tell you it is a conviction of faith, but because of the position I hold, but far beyond that, it's just a position of government and good government versus bad government policy. And I just believe that it's bad policy to create a special protected class in this case, because I do think there's an arguable difference between an individual's race and someone's sexual behavior.
But there's clearly, even in the public sector, there's a demonstration going on right now in this state of people considering active discrimination. Amendment 1 was passed, but then it was defeated by the federal district court on October the 10th, 2014. A judge declared the ban unconstitutional. But now there's a move afoot in the legislature that would allow civil servants who perform marriages at the civil level to refuse to do so for same-sex couples. Would that be legal? Wouldn't that be discriminatory?
So like I said, we don't know the true bounds of the constitutional protections for discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So I would say it probably depends. But
and wouldn't that open the slippery slope? Because if I don't want to marry a gay person, why would I? Maybe I don't want to marry a Jewish person. And maybe I don't want to marry a black person.
And slippery slopes happen all the time.
Maybe so, I don't want to marry a mixed couple.
But it does come down to we're talking about a state decision, so it comes down to the conflict of the right to free exercise of your religion versus the right to marry. There's one argument that I think it's pretty clear legally that you can't deny somebody the right to marry, assuming the Supreme Court ratifies that. You can't deny somebody the right to marry that significantly infringes on that right. So if the entire courthouse says you can't get married there, that's a pretty significant infringement on the right, particularly if you have to go significantly farther. But if there's an accommodation so another clerk could handle it that doesn't have an objection in the same courthouse, that's a closer legal issue. But again, we don't know the bounds yet. And hopefully the Supreme Court clarifies that.
What's your stand? Dr. Harris, I know that you won't be marrying people of the same sex in your church, but what's your position on that with regard to civil servants who perform that?
Well, again, the civil servants in North Carolina that were magistrates took that oath and understanding that our Constitution, and we had a law before we had the constitutional amendment declaring that marriage in the state of North Carolina was between a man and a woman. There were many people that took that oath as a magistrate and took the appointment understanding that while they would be performing marriages, they wouldn't be performing same-sex ceremonies. And so when the federal judge, as you said, with a stroke of a pen, struck down what the people had voted, 61-39%, at that particular time.
Now, let's be clear that a very small percentage of the voters of North Carolina actually voted in that election.
Well, but I'm just telling you, that's the only true poll we have.
Right.
I mean, we can talk about polls all day long, and we can talk about trends changing, but 34 states in the United States where the people had a chance to vote voted that marriage was between a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that discriminatory?
Well, let me finish what we were talking about a moment ago before I go down that road, because you get my train of thought off, Mike. In fact, what was the question I was even talking about before that?
I honestly don't remember.
Thank you very much.
So it's interesting. The people that voted for this amendment were voting for their view of what marriage is. So the Southern Baptist view of marriage was the thing that they wanted to put into law. There are other churches that believe marriages between same-sex couples are fine in their churches. So whose church trumps here? I mean, why should the Southern Baptist view of marriage trump that other church that believes they can marry? Why?
We were talking about magistrates, if I can finish that point.
Well, you can finish that point in a second. We're talking about all this on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE. Go ahead.
On the magistrates, the folks who did take that oath did it understanding they would do weddings, but not expecting to do same-sex ceremonies. I know one of the magistrates that did step aside, and she resigned.
But that's going to be my question. If they took the job under the thought process that it came into being because of a marriage amendment, and that goes by the wayside, and they simply cannot, as a matter of conscience, do their job, should they not step down?
But the question of the day is, do they have where does that line stop of their religion, their freedom of religion, and their religious conviction to not do those weddings? And that's what this bill, Senate Bill 2, is about, is basically protecting individuals who are magistrates. They could have been grandfathered in.
Isn't that a protected class of people?
What?
Protecting magistrates who don't want to perform their jobs for certain people. Aren't we setting up a protected class of people?
No, the protected class that he's talking about is religion, right? I mean, that you can't discriminate based on religion. That is protected.
So if I work for a company that suddenly decides it wants, I work for a financial institution, and now that financial institution wants to now make guns, and I don't believe in guns, should I then request my government create a protected class out of me in that financial institution because I don't believe in guns? Or should I say, I morally don't believe in guns and the company I work for makes guns now, I should quit and find a job that aligns with my morality?
Gaston County Magistrate William Stevenson was quoted in the Daily Cause, and if the Daily Cause is right about this, as saying, there comes a point where one has to choose between following the commandments of the Lord and following the commands of the government. Didn't Jesus say, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's? Doesn't that cover that topic? If you're a civil servant, you do your civil servant job, whether or not it conflicts with your religious beliefs.
Well, Jesus made it clear, if you look in the Gospels, that, as a believer, you really become a citizen of two places. You're a citizen of heaven, you're a citizen of the United States of America.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that you should have to check your religious convictions at the door when you walk into your job.
We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're with Scott Bishop, board chair of the Mecklenburg LGBT PAC, national board member of the Human Rights Campaign, Dr. Mark Harris, senior pastor at First Baptist Church of Charlotte, and Dr. John Schmier, associate professor and associate chair in the Department of Political Science at UNC Charlotte. We're talking about the ordinance and all around the ordinance that went to defeat at the city council that would have extended protections, legal protections to LGBT people. Let me share with you some of the things that have come in from listeners as we've been talking. Bill emails, I'm a gay man, 65 years old, retired teacher, 42 years at CMS. I attended the Charlotte City Council hearing and preceding rally. I was quiet, listened carefully. What I heard overwhelmingly was fear and ignorance expressed from the anti-forces. Hatred was a recurring but not pervasive subtext. I had hoped that Charlotte would step up and say publicly that their LGBT citizens are equal. Apparently, we are the last group for whom bigotry is legal. Religious prejudice, fear, and ignorance trumps my rights, but not the haters. Indeed, my request for basic civil rights has been recast as an assault on their religious right to hate and discriminate. Dr. Harris, how would you respond to that?
Well, again, I would say I can only speak for me, and I do not have the perspective that I want an individual to be discriminated against. But at the same time, I understand in the role of government that it is important to protect the First Amendment rights. I do believe that the whole slippery slope, and we've talked about that on several sides today, I do believe the slippery slope of creating protected classes can go continue down. I mean, who's to say an individual doesn't want to marry two or three people? And who's to say that if the baker is forced today and the florist is forced today to participate in the same-sex ceremony, even though it violates their convictions, literally, well, how close are we to what you said earlier, that everybody assumes that I'm not going to be forced in order to perform or be involved in a same-sex ceremony?
Well, you can't be. Constitutionally, you can't.
No, you can't be forced to.
Well, but I would also say that that's exactly the position of the florist in the state of Washington, that she cannot be forced to,
but
because
the,
of her
florist,
freedom of religion.
But a florist is not a religious organization. A florist is a florist.
A florist got a permit from the government to operate a public business. So the government granted her that privilege to do that, and with that privilege means you serve the whole public. You don't discriminate against anyone. So how do you – I mean, she's now choosing who to serve and who not to serve. If she wanted to do that, she should have opened up a bakery her church.
On the other hand, isn't it the right of a business, if you're a bar or a restaurant, to turn people away if you don't want them there? Maybe they're not dressed properly. Maybe they're not acting properly. Maybe they look like they might threaten your other patrons. Is it not your right as a business owner to say, no, you can't come in here?
If the person that they're refusing service to is, you know, going to cause trouble, what, for whatever reason, if it's not based on who they are, it's based on what they might do.
Dr. Schmier.
So that was an argument that was used to justify, for example, the discrimination in public accommodations based on race and other factors. For the most part, while that type of right to contract was very strong in, say, 1905, it's been diminished. You know, the Civil Rights Acts that do prohibit public accommodation discrimination based on race, so the restaurant can't discriminate based on race. They've rejected those arguments.
Joseph emails, the Constitution does two things appropriate to this discussion. It protects the rights of minorities, thus we do not live in a majority rules country, and it protects your right to practice your religion. It does not protect your religious convictions. It protects your right to practice it. One is exclusive of the other. Any comment from anybody?
Well, first, it's not entirely true. Your religious convictions actually have the strongest protection. So I have the right to believe what I want about religion and faith. And the government can't change that belief. So my convictions are strong. It's actually the behavior to some degree that can be regulated. And the question is, where do we draw the line? Mark's behavior as a pastor is about as constitutionally protected while, like the councilman said, while you're in your church, your protections are strongest.
Jeff writes, if Dr. Harris believes being gay is a choice while race is not, how can he defend laws preventing prejudice based upon religion, since religion is clearly a choice, especially these days with countless denominations sprouting up constantly?
Well, one of the things to the point that John made was that that while it's protected, and I made the point earlier that I think that, again, this would lead us down a slippery slope. We've had a mission partnership for 3 years in the country of Serbia, which was formerly Yugoslavia. When we've been over there on our mission trips, and I've talked to natives there of Yugoslavia, and they speak about their communist leader, Tito, he was considered somebody that they all kind of appreciated. And I said, really? And they said, yes, because under communist Yugoslavia and Tito, we had freedom of religion. And I said, well, explain that to me. And they said, you see, all of these churches, and there are churches in every village as you drive through Serbia. And they said, we were free to worship and do anything we wanted to do inside those buildings. Mm-hmm. We just could not take it outside those buildings. That's where you were at risk of being arrested. That's where you were at risk of violating communism. My great concern, as I shared with a council member who was explaining to me, I could worship in my house and I could worship in the church house, but it was limited to there, as I was making the point that the business individual certainly deserved their religious freedom to express even in their business, if they choose, their conviction. I said that was saying to me that if And it happened even when we went last summer. We were renting a public park, and we were going to do stations for the children during a Bible study. We were going to do Bible study. We were going to do games. We were going to do sports, and we were going to do refreshments. Well, they told us, you're free to do the sports. You're free to do the refreshments. You're free to even do music or whatever. But when you get to the Bible study, that's going to not be allowed in this park. And we had to rent a building 100 yards away, so when the children came time for their station to go to to Bible study, we had to walk them to that building where they could have that. And I said to the councilman, that just makes me nervous because that's saying I can't go to Marshall Park, which is right behind First Baptist Church, and lead children in a Bible story.
A lot of this discussion, and obviously the anti-gay marriage part of this back a year ago when it was being debated, and this discussion now that took place a week ago, 2 weeks ago at the City Council, is being led by religious leaders. We heard several of them in the opening comment. We asked you to be here because you're a leader in this. I don't want to call it a movement, but you are an opinion leader in this area. There are those who would say that churches who do not pay taxes should not get involved outside of the pulpit in political discussions, or they should pay taxes. What's your opinion about that? I mean, if you're going to be out there saying beating the drum for your opinion politically, should you be paying taxes?
Well, I believe historically that if you look at our nation and its founding, there was that foundation that was placed in this country. And if you go back and you look at American history, that it was actually pastors speaking in the pulpit and the things that happened that led to abolition of slavery in this country. And it was individuals that were willing to go to the pulpit that some would have called a political issue in that day. I believe we're speaking on issues that the Bible speaks to and are relevant in our day. Other people may call them political issues, but they are issues nonetheless.
Does the Bible trump the Constitution?
No.
Does the Bible trump the Constitution?
Not under law.
Under law, yes. What he said.
Okay, but in your mind, the Bible has to
come first. In my mind, if I am put in a position of having to choose what God's Word says and what God desires versus man's law, I'm going to choose to stand on God's Word.
I don't want to run out of time before we talk about an issue that kind of took over the discussion at City Council, and that was the issue of the use of bathrooms by transgendered individuals. Scott, do you see this as a red herring? Did this come up because it makes everybody emotional and they get very upset and they have very strong opinions about it and there's a lot of fear about this? Is it a red herring or is it a genuine concern?
I think people have concerns about it, but I think that concerns are misplaced. I mean, bad actors are going to do bad things. There's no way putting this ordinance in place would enable or prevent that. These ordinances have been in place in 17 states, 200 cities, and there are instances of people going into restrooms and harming children. But that could happen with or without
the
ordinance.
Well, the concern is over pedophilia, am I right?
That was the concern. I've been very clear, and I want to be clear again. I never said that any transgender individual would automatically have any desire to harm a child. I simply said from the beginning that I thought we were opening a door. I had a concern if my daughter, when she was younger, went to the restroom and a transgender man was in that restroom and she accidentally was exposed to something that I wasn't prepared for my 6 or 7 or 8 year old daughter to be exposed to. As a parent, as a father, I was genuinely concerned about that.
But a lot of the people were concerned because of pedophilia. And isn't it true that most pedophilia occurs among the heterosexual population, not the transgendered population and not the gay population?
I don't have numbers on that. I mean, first, the person that your daughter would have seen in the restroom would have been a transgender woman, not a transgender man. So it would have been a woman. And yes, you would have had to explain that. It would have been uncomfortable for you for a little bit of time. But still, that person would have been able to use the facilities in private.
I'm not clear on how that would happen because a transgendered woman would be using the ladies' room. And the ladies' room has stalls, not urinals. So what would they be exposed to?
Well, again, I was making the point that if you're in the same room and we don't know what they might be exposed to. I mean, there was a case just in Michigan this week that was reported of a lady that went into a Planet Fitness, and Michigan evidently had this law wherever she was in Michigan, and she walked into the ladies' locker room and there was a transgender woman, I guess, that was a man, and he was undressed there in the locker room, and she went and reported that to the management and was concerned.
So if you've made a decision that you were born in the wrong body and you're going to be a transgendered individual, you're going to be a man dressing as a woman or a woman dressing as a man, which bathroom are you supposed to use? Because if you are a woman dressed as a man and you walk into the ladies' room...
From a safety perspective, you should be using the restroom that aligns with your presentation. If you are a woman and you appear to be a woman, you should be in the woman's room based on our societal norms here in the United States.
Right,
if you
now,
are a transgender man, you go to the men's room.
And right now you can't do that legally.
You can. Happens all the time. Transgender people are using the restrooms that align with their expressions here in Charlotte all the time. What this law would do is if they were harassed, like happened at CPCC, a transgender woman was coming out of the women's room, and she was stopped by campus police saying to, you know, show your ID, prove you are who you are.
Now, CPCC says that they have, although the city and county do have a policy on this, correct?
With respect to their own employees.
Yes.
But not with respect to regular citizens.
As you said, an employee of the government of Charlotte-Mecklenburg government, a transgender employee can use the appropriate restroom, but a citizen walking into a public building who is not an employee has no protections. They cannot.
And I should also say the UNC system has protections
okay.
based on sexual orientation and gender identity for students and faculty and staff.
And then can I make a
Hold
point?
Hold on. I'm going to just question. Point out because you brought up CPCC. CPCC has no policy regarding restroom use by transgendered individuals.
By students, yeah, or faculty. Yes.
Okay.
And I just wanted to ask the question because I think Scott made a point that how they present themselves, they should go into the restroom as they present themselves. Is my understanding, and I am willing to be corrected if I'm wrong, that under this ordinance, you didn't have to present yourself as be dressed as a woman to go into a men's room. But the ordinance, the way it was read and written, that it was based on how anyone felt on that particular day, not how they were presenting themselves.
No, that's not the way it was written. It was written to protect people so that when they are presenting as who they are, they are harassed for it, there's a recourse that they can follow. But yeah, if I'm a transgender woman and I'm in the midst of my transition and I'm presenting as a male, I'm not going to decide to go into the women's room for my safety, for my own safety, and because I don't want to make other women feel uncomfortable because I'm presenting.
Difficult issue this morning on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE. Are there any laws on the books in North Carolina or elsewhere mandating gender-segregated restrooms? In other words, if I as a man walk, dressed as a man, walk into the ladies' room or vice versa, is there anything that says I'm going to be arrested for doing that?
I think, and I'm not positive about this, that there are regulations at the administrative level. But I'm not positive, and I don't believe there's anything certainly at the state level.
Interestingly, before the ordinance changes were put into effect, there was a clause in the Charlotte ordinance that says you cannot discriminate in public accommodations, and then as it relates to sex, you can discriminate, which meant we did have the ability to create gender-segregated bathrooms. It was decided to remove that. We asked City Council, if you want to leave that in there and allow gender-segregated bathrooms, that's fine. We don't care as long as transgender people get to use the bathroom how they present.
Joyce writes, I am offended by the inference that choosing who to have sexual relations with is the same as being African American. I don't know that we made that point, but okay. I've been discriminated against and kept from jobs that I clearly was qualified for based on my dark skin and was told the position had been filled. Being squeezed out of life doesn't happen because you had sex with someone of the same sex. I may not be having sex at all, but I can have special privileges if I have sex with another woman. I'm not sure that I understand that, but what she's saying, I think, is that she can't help who she is and has been discriminated against, but gay people may or may not be, and there's no way to prove it.
Well, gay people are. People are, you know, not hired or fired based on who they are all the time. But there are no laws that protect it in a lot of places, especially in North Carolina.
And again, legally, I think the Supreme Court has moved, particularly Justice Kennedy, who's a swing voter, away from saying it's about special rights. For example, when it comes to sodomy, heterosexuals have the same rights to sodomy. The sodomy laws prohibited all sorts of heterosexual sex. So those rights go both ways.
Dr. John Schmier, you get the last word. We're out of time. Dr. Mark Harris from First Baptist Church, Scott Bishop of the Mecklenburg LGBT PAC. We could go on for another 3 hours, but we can't. We're done. Thank you for the hour.